This episode of Locked On MLB is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. They're good for you. They're tasty, and I can't get enough of the mint brownie. Use promo code Locked On for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Let's get on with the show.
You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball, and I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. Today's episode is being dropped on the 25th day of May 2020, and we are going to be doing a recreation of what would have been an astounding World Series, the World Series of 1988. In a parallel universe. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to us directly on the website, which is lockedonmlb.com. And when you're staying home during this national and global crisis, you can listen to us on your smart device. Just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. It really is your team every day, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLB_net. We're on Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Yeah, it is the 25th day of May. This is Memorial Day, which is usually the first checkpoint of the season. This is usually the first point you really could take a look at the team and say, okay, we've got a third of the season under the belt. What are we? Are we contenders or not? Should we make trades or not? What could we do? And sort of psychologically, I look at the season as broken into thirds. Opening day until Memorial Day. Memorial Day until Labor Day. Or Memorial Day until the trade deadline of August 1st. August 1st to the end of the season. As the August and September are really the last really big run of the season. And alas, we don't have a season yet. We all know why. We all know my stance on it. And let's just leave it at that. This is also because I'm a big movie buff. This is an anniversary of the release of Star Wars, which came out in 1977. Man, there are several things in life that meant everything to me growing up. Star Wars was one. Baseball was the other. And while Star Wars has let me down big time over the last bunch of decades, baseball keeps coming through for me. Except, of course, the years where we're not playing it. Hey, let's talk about something here. We all love upsets because they're a great story. An unlikely team comes up and wins. We love that story. We all love that concept in sports. It's one of the things that drives us to watching the games, that they're not predetermined, they're not preordained. And every once in a while, you have something that is truly startling. And I can honestly say, the most startling postseason result I've ever seen in my life was the 1988 postseason, because you had very clearly two gigantic super teams in that postseason. The Oakland A's, the New York Mets, both won over 100 games. Both were filled with superstars. Both had incredibly deep rotations, dominant bullpens, big-time power in their lineup, and they seemed destined to be in a collision course for the 1988 World Series. The Los Angeles Dodgers looked like they were, well, there to fill out the dance card. They were there because technically someone had to win the National League West. And while the Dodgers did have a fine season, and they wound up getting a lot of dramatics from National League MVP Kirk Gibson and a historically great season for Merle Hershiser, let's face it, the Dodgers didn't belong on the same field with them. In fact, of the four playoff teams, the Dodgers was undoubtedly the worst one. My beloved Red Sox, the Morgan Magic Red Sox, were not nearly the team the Oakland A's won. In fact, that Red Sox team didn't even win 90 games. But they did have two aces. They had Roger Clemens, they had Bruce Hurst. They had a team that was filled with veterans and young players, and the Mike Greenwells and Ellis Brooks of the world, alongside the Jim Rices and the Dwight Evans and Wade Boggses of the world. It was an intriguing team with Lee Smith handling the bullpen. If you had told me a team was going to come up and upset everyone, I would have hoped it would have been that Red Sox team. But alas, it were the Dodgers. And we all agree that those Dodger victories in that postseason were thrilling. The series against the Mets was phenomenal. Game 4 is one of the most underrated, underappreciated postseason games of all time, with a Mike Socha home run against Dwight Gooden. The Mets should have absolutely steamrolled the Dodgers, especially because they won the two games that Hershiser started in Game 1 and in Game 3. Game 3 was delayed because of rain, so they pitched Hershiser again, and in both of those games, the bullpen lost it. So the whole idea that the Dodgers were going to have a prayer was just keep winning the Hershiser starts. And as it were, they were able to win, and they got a save out of Hershiser one game and a complete game victory out of Hershiser. And then Hershiser beat the A's his two games, and Gibson hit that home run, which we all remember the home run with him gimpy walking around, you know, limping around the bases. But lest we forget, that was Game 1. And from that moment, it completely changed the complexion of that series, because the A's should have won that series in 5. Maybe 6, because you knew you were going to get 2 Hershiser starts. But the nanosecond Gibson hit that home run, and we all know the home run I'm talking about against Dennis Eckersley, down to their last pitch, walk-off, come-from-behind homer that gave the Dodgers the victory. And when he was limping around the bases, everyone thought, wait a minute, they won that game, and Hershiser's pitching the next one. The Dodgers could go up 2-0, which is exactly what they did, and they put the A's on their heels. The Dodgers won the World Series that year, and it was a great story. It was a feel-good story. But in retrospect, sometimes upsets are a little frustrating. Sometimes you kind of want to see the best teams go head-to-head. Sometimes you want to see those two Rams running at each other and butting heads. If you have two super teams, isn't it fun to think of what it would be like if they actually played each other? Matching up of 100-win teams in a World Series is quite rare indeed. It happened in the 2017 World Series with Los Angeles and Houston, although I'll just leave it at that, not to upset the folks at Locked On Astros. In retrospect, as wonderful as it was to see the Dodgers win, and what a feel-good story that was, and several players on that team won their lone World Series ring, including Earl Hershiser, you know, I kind of sort of wished the Mets and the A's played each other. Now, I want to make one thing clear. At that point, I hated the Mets. As a Red Sox fan, I was still stinging from 1986. I also didn't like the A's. The A's swept the Red Sox, and I was living in the Bay Area at the time, surrounded by people who were doing the forearm bash. But as a baseball fan, and one who is now less concerned about teams and franchises, more about the good of the game, it would have been something to see those two teams match up. And so I used What If Sports, and I created a simulation of the A's and the Mets in the 1988 World Series, using the assumption that the A's swept the Red Sox, as they did in real life, and the Mets won Game 7 of the NLCS against Los Angeles. And I did the simulation, and let me tell you, the result did not disappoint, and the MVP of the series was crystal clear. And it was worth it. So, before we dive into this, let me tell you something. You got to get your energy up. You got to get yourself ready. You got to get yourself totally prepared to relive this World Series that didn't happen. And I'm going to start off with another delicious Built Bar. Now, let me tell you something. Built Bars are great. I'm not just saying that. I'm not just saying that because they're sponsoring this podcast. No. They're great. They're really, really good. They're really terrific. The flavors are great. They have exactly the kind of flavors that I like. I love chocolate. It's a weakness of mine. I love the brownie. I love the mint brownie. My favorite one is chocolate raspberry, which is spectacular. They have 8 great flavors or nut flavors, nut-free flavors. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They don't taste like a shoe, like most protein bars do. But they have all the stuff you want from a protein bar. If you're trying to maintain weight or lose weight, they're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. I'm holding up my peanut butter brownie. It's got 20 grams of protein, 170 calories, 3 grams sugar, 3 grams net carb. That's really good on all accounts. And let me tell you something. There's an offer just for today where you get a free pack of assorted Boost energy drink mix with your offer of Built Bar. Now, let me tell you something. You get $5 off of every box of bars for this week, and that could be used in addition to the $10 off promo code. And there are 4 new flavors: peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie. Are you kidding me? Blueberry lemon. Okay, loving it. Here's what you got to do. You got to go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON. You get your $10 off your first order, throw another $5 off of every bar for just this week. Use a promo code LOCKEDON for all of those discounts. It's fantastic. Now, I've said it before, I've said it again. You can't live on Built Bars alone, as much as you want to. Sometimes you got to order from a restaurant, even during this unusual time. Now, there's a barbecue place in my town. They've got great burgers, they've got great ribs, and guess what your pal Sully likes? Fish and chips. Okay? I can like the fish, I like the chips, but when you put them together, oh boy. How do I get them? I get them through Postmates. And they take it right from this local barbecue. We're not getting a plug here. We're talking Postmates here. And they deliver them right to the door. Don't even have to open the door. They leave it right on your stoop, okay? And they have Postmates pickup, which I've been using for some other orders for a different place for the rest of my family. You need to be supporting your neighborhood spots right now. And I've been ordering local because it's a great way to support my town. But not just for burgers, not just for fish and chips, okay? They've made my life easier by picking up everything I need from Walgreens and 7-Eleven and dropping it off outside my door. Just download the Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. Now, for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code LOCKEDON. That's code LOCKEDON for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. When you don't download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Okay, so let me just tell you one of the parameters here when I set up this simulation. There are 2 things with the Mets pitching staff I had to keep in mind. One is, if the Mets won Game 7 of the NLCS the way that it had all lined up, they would have used David Cone in Game 6, and this happened in real life. They had David Cone pitching Game 6 and Ron Darling and Dwight Gooden pitching in Game 7. And I'm assuming all that happened in this simulation. So that means they burnt right through Gooden, Darling, and Cone when setting up Game 1 of the World Series against the A's. And another thing to remember is that just before the postseason began, Bobby Ojeda had an incident with a hedge trimmer that cut his finger and took him off the postseason roster. And so with all that keeping in mind, that means the rotation, at least how I'm doing it here, lined up that Sid Fernandez would have to start Game 1 of the World Series against the Oakland A's. Dave Stewart, who pitched so brilliantly against the Red Sox in the real-life ALCS, would be starting Game 1. So the World Series began A's, Mets, 2 teams that won over 100 games, facing off in the World Series. Fernandez pitching for the Mets gets the A's 1-2-3 in the first, 1-2-3 in the second. They works around a walk in the third, and they go to the bottom of the third scoreless. Now, Dave Stewart on the mound, dominant against Boston, but a single by Mackie Sasser, a walk by Lenny Dykstra, and Greg Jeffries singled home Sasser. Keith Hernandez singles home Dykstra. A fielder's choice by Kevin McReynolds put the Mets up 3-0. Sasser, who was playing for Carter in this game, got a double that scored Wally Backman to make it 4-0. Then Greg Jeffries hit a ground rule double, scored on a Daryl Strawberry double. Through six innings, or going into the sixth inning, the Mets were not only up 5-0, but Sid Fernandez pushed into starting duty only because of Cohn and Darling and Gooden pitching the final games against Los Angeles, did not allow a hit for the first five innings. Walt Weiss broke up the no-hitter in the sixth, but through seven, Fernandez was dealing 5-0, throwing a two-hit shutout. In the eighth inning, Fernandez came out to pitch again. Why not push your luck? You got seven strong innings out of him. See if you can get an eighth. Well, he didn't quite have it. Singles by Lansford and Steinbach, a walk by Walt Weiss. Luis Polonia walked. Tony Phillips hit a ground ball. And next thing you know, it was 5-2. The A's were chipping away at it. Dave Henderson got a two-run single. And then, with Roger McDowell in relief of Fernandez, he hit Carney Lansford with the bases loaded, and suddenly the 5-0 Mets lead was a tie, 5-5. Greg Catterae tried to push the game into the ninth inning, tied, but the Mets rallied. A single by Magadan, Mookie Wilson came in and stole second. Keith Hernandez hit to right center field, scoring Mookie Wilson. The Mets took a 6-5 lead. Don Baylor singled in the ninth as a pinch hitter against Randy Myers, and pinch runner Stan Javier stole second base and got to third on a wild pitch, but was stranded there. The A's heroics to tie the game in the eighth were for naught. The Mets took game one, 6-5. In game two, Dwight Gooden pitched against Storm Davis. The Mets took an early lead with a double by Howard Johnson that scored Kevin McReynolds. The A's got their first lead of the series when Mark McGwire singled home Dave Henderson to make it 2-1 Oakland. But after that, the Mets unloaded. A Greg Jeffries triple and a Keith Hernandez double gave the Mets the lead 3-2. Gary Carter, back in the lineup, singled home Howard Johnson to make it 4-2. Gary Carter then hit a home run in the sixth inning, and the rout was on. Daryl Strawberry hit an opposite field home run in the eighth to push the lead to 8-2. Dwight Gooden went the distance for his first World Series victory, going 9 innings, striking out 10, allowing only 2 runs. The Mets were up 2-0, and what looked like was going to be a clash of titans was very quickly turning into the Mets dreaming of an absolute sweep of the A's. So, back to Oakland they go. The World Series is in Oakland for the first time since 1974. Bob Welch on the mound for the A's. Ron Darling on the mound for the Mets. And the A's push 2 runs across in the top of the first. RBI hits by Dave Parker and Mark McGwire make it 2-0 Oakland. But Greg Jeffries and company, well, their bats just came alive. Scored 3 runs in the second inning. The Mets took a 3-2 lead. Ron Hassey, who was catching for Bob Welch, hit an opposite field home run to tie the game in the fourth. In the seventh, Daryl Strawberry parked a massive home run to right center field. The Mets had the lead again. Keith Hernandez singled home Greg Jeffries to make it 5-3. And then in the eighth inning, with Ron Darling still on the mound, the Mets made a big push. But Stan Javier scored on a Mark McGwire single. Carney Lansford got a hit. Next thing you know, the game was tied. In the bottom of the ninth, with 2 outs and nobody on, Luis Polonia singled, stole second, and Dave Henderson singled, and the A's won on a 6-5 walk-off win. The A's were on the board. Game four in Oakland. The matchup was David Cohn pitching for the Mets, Dave Stewart pitching for the A's. In the bottom of the first, Jose Canseco crushed a home run down the left field line to make it 2-0 Oakland early. Greg Jeffries, whose bat was smoking hot, singled home Gary Carter to make it 2-1. But both Cohn and Stewart pitched brilliantly the rest of the way. In fact, no team could score after Greg Jeffries' single. Dennis Eckersley? Nope, no need for him. Dave Stewart went the full distance, going 9 innings, striking out 9, allowing just the 1 run. David Cohn was brilliant, allowing only 2 runs in his 8 innings in the complete game's loss, as the A's tied the series 2-1. All of a sudden, what looked like it was going to be a Mets sweep, the A's could take the lead in the series with another win at home. So game five, a critical game. Storm Davis, Dwight Gooden. Greg Jeffries came up in the first with Lenny Dykstra on and crushed a home run to right field. Jeffries was on fire. Gooden was holding the A's down and worked out of a rally in the second inning when Tony Phillips grounded out with the bases loaded. Jeffries hit another home run to make it 4-0. The score remained 4-0 in the sixth when Walt Weiss got a 2-run single to make it 4-2. That was 2 unearned runs off of Gooden. Another unearned run in the seventh when Daryl Strawberry misplayed a fly ball, tied the game, scoring Henderson and Canseco. But in the eighth, hits by Dykstra, by Jeffries, and by Hernandez gave the Mets another lead. They had a lead of 5-4 going into the ninth. Randy Myers on the mound. Luis Polonia got on with a hit. Dave Henderson got on with a hit. Canseco struck out, but Parker walked. The bases were loaded. Mark McGwire at the plate. A fly ball would tie the game with one out. A base hit would certainly win the game, as Polonia and Dave Henderson could score on a single. McGwire hit a sharp grounder to Jeffries, who threw home to Carter and then threw to Hernandez for a 5-2-3 game-ending double play. The Mets were up 3-2, heading back to New York, looking to win their second World Series title in 3 years. Instead of pushing either Gooden, as Gooden won the game five, instead of pushing for Darling in game six, Sid Fernandez, who started game one so well, got the ball again. Bob Welch was asked to save the A's season. Canseco singled in the third to open the scoring 1-0 Oakland. Then Howard Johnson made an error that scored Ron Hassey. The A's were up 2-0. The score remained 2-0 until the sixth, when Keith Hernandez hit a sacrifice fly that scored Lenny Dykstra. Welch came out after 6 innings. Greg Catterae was asked to hold the lead in the seventh. He did so. In the eighth, Dave Magadan got on base on a walk, and Mookie Wilson, as a pinch runner, stole second, and Greg Jeffries again singled home Wilson. But Hernandez's double play suddenly ended the Mets' rally. In the top of the ninth, Glenn Hubbard, light-hitting Glenn Hubbard, homered off of Randy Myers to give the A's a 3-2 lead. With all the sluggers like Canseco, McGwire, Parker, Baylor, Terry Steinbach, Dave Henderson, all these people who were legit home run threats, it was Glenn Hubbard who put the Mets on top. Dennis Eckersley came up to hold the 3-2 victory, but Kevin McReynolds singled. Strawberry came up. A home run could win the World Series for the Mets. He popped up to Hubbard. McReynolds stole second. Then Howard Johnson took strike three. Wally Backman walked. So now the tying run was on, and the run that could win the World Series was at first, and future Hall of Famer Gary Carter came to the plate and popped up weakly to second base. Eckersley got the save, and now there was going to be a Game 7. Game 7 of the World Series, 200-win teams locking antlers, Ron Darling, Dave Stewart. Who was going to come out on top? Greg Jeffries singled, stole second, got to third on a wild throw by Terry Steinbach, and scored on a sacrifice fly to put the Mets up early 1-0. The Mets scored on the fourth inning on a home run by McReynolds, a single by Carter, and a double by Lenny Dykstra. Next thing you know, Stewart had to be lifted after just four innings. But the real eye-opening thing, as the Mets built a 5-0 lead in Game 7 of the World Series, looking to clinch, another piece of drama started to unfold. Ron Darling had held the A's hitless through five. Now, Sid Fernandez had done that in Game 1. But then, Darling got him hitless through six, and then through seven. Greg Jeffries homered in the seventh inning, his fourth home run of the World Series. It looked like it was a foregone conclusion that the Mets were going to walk to the World Series clincher as they were up 6-0. The real question was Ron Darling going to throw a World Series clinching no-hitter? In the eighth inning, Glenn Hubbard grounded out. He was now five outs to go. Walt Weiss came up and hit a single into right center field. So the no-hitter was over. But pinch hitter Stan Javier struck out and put the Mets to within four outs of winning the World Series. But Carney Lansford hit a double that ended the shutout. Dave Henderson reached on an infield single, and Jose Canseco hit a towering home run to center field. Suddenly, a 6-0 Mets laugher turned into a 6-4 nail biter. Roger McDowell came in to pitch, got Dave Parker out. Carter got on base in the eighth, but Dave Magadan struck out, and the game went to the top of the ninth. Randy Myers came in to pitch. McGuire grounded out, Steinbach grounded out, Glenn Hubbard got a single to stay on base, but then pinch hitter Don Baylor grounded weakly to Greg Jeffries, who threw across the diamond, and the Mets won the World Series. For the second time in 3 years, the Mets were champions. There was no lingering, oh, is this going to be an underachieving team with only one title? No. The answer to that was no. Lots of familiar faces from 1986 put together big, big series. Sid Fernandez had two solid starts. Dwight Gooden, who pitched eight innings and allowed no earned runs in his first win and threw a complete game in his other win, got two victories in the World Series, dominated, and in any other series would have been the MVP. But the MVP of this series was Greg Jeffries. Greg Jeffries batted 500 in the seven-game series. He slugged 533. His on-base percentage was 533. He slugged 1.035. His OPS was 1.568. He homered four times. He drove in eight runs. He scored five runs in the series. He was absolutely unstoppable. And the phenom of the Mets system came up as not even a rookie, because his rookie eligibility continued into 1989. And he would have been the prince of the city. No matter what he would have done for the rest of his career, his dominant performance as World Series MVP would have made him a New York folk hero. Now, what would that have meant? What would that title have meant for the Mets? Would they have broken up the team like they did so unceremoniously in 1989? Would they have kept the team closer together, trying to see if they can make it three World Series in four? Would it have meant that Strawberry and Gooden would have stayed there long term? And would the hero worship of Greg Jeffries have made him the star that all of New York expected him to be when he exploded onto the scene at the end of the 1988 season? I don't know the answer, and neither do you. All I know is I ran a bunch of simulations of this, and there were some wild, wild scenarios, and this was one of my favorite ones. Sometimes the A's came out, sometimes the Mets came out, but they almost always came out in a seven-game thriller. So yeah, the Kirk Gibson home run, the Earl Hershiser victory, and believe me, Dodger fans need that title from 1988. But man, we could have had a classic, couldn't we? Well, it's fun to think about. Hey, tomorrow we're going to be doing a little time machine. We're going to go back to 1990. Some of my thoughts of that season, both on the field and with your pal Sully. But remember, eat yourself some Built Bars, listen to us at the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app, and follow us on LockedOnMLB_net on Twitter, LockedOnMLB on Instagram. Creating an alternate universe 1988 World Series. This has been Locked On MLB for the 25th day of May 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.